This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is mediation of labor and employment law cases and disputes. My guests are labor and employment law attorneys who specialize in mediating labor and employment law cases and disputes. Mark Rudy, who was awarded the 2013 Mediator of the Year Award by the San Francisco Trial Lawyers Association. He's a partner in the San Francisco law firm of Rudy, Axelrod, Zeef, and Lowe. My other guest is Lisa Clurman, a law professor at USC and the director of the USC Mediation Clinic, and has a mediation office in Rolling Hills Estates, which is in California. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding for the program is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you are listening to this program live, and this happens to be July 29th, I want to let you know that every month, usually either the 4th, sometimes the 5th, Wednesday of the month, we do what's called Call a Lawyer, where a number of attorneys will be here in the conference room at the station, KLW in San Francisco, to take calls off the air. And you might want to jot down this number, because they're here right now, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Very briefly, we have several certified specialists in the law, workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan, criminal law, Jeffrey Hayden, family law, Janet Lee Frankel, legal malpractice law, Peter Fortune, and joining us, actually from Wisconsin, civil trial practice, certified specialist Keith Clifford, who is a director of the National Board of Trial Advocacy, is with us. If you want to talk to him about trial practice, it's 888. This is his toll-free number, 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. Also with us, we have Sal Timpano for landlord-tenant law, employment law, Joseph LaPera, tax law, real estate, Frank Adam, patent law, aviation law, lemon law, Ron Rohde. Tomorrow, July 30th, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available Thursday morning between 8 a.m. to noon. And a little bit later in the program, I'll let you know about that. Now, let me get to my guests who I would like you to respond to, and you'll have a chance, if you're listening to this program live, to call in and speak to them in the second half hour of the program. Lisa, let me throw this one at you. What's the difference, or describe the difference, between mediation and arbitration? How do they differ?
Sure. Okay, so in an arbitration, the third-party neutral is acting like a private judge, and the arbitrator issues a binding decision. It means that you're stuck with what that arbitrator rules, and the arbitrator's really replacing the role that the judge would otherwise have, or the jury. And in mediation, a mediator does not rule in favor of one side or the other, doesn't decide who wins or how much is awarded. A mediator helps both sides reach a decision that works for both sides. And it's only if it works for both sides that there is an agreement.
Well, that makes sense. You know, Mark?
And there's been a trend in the last 5 or 6 years where employers are requiring employees to arbitrate their employment claims.
That's
rather
a provision,
than,
yeah, in their employment agreement.
In their employment agreements. And the question is whether they're enforceable, of course, and some are and some are not. But we're going to see a lot more arbitrations going forward.
We are. And I think banks are doing this also, are they not?
Definitely. In the consumer area, certainly
yeah,
in the consumer area.
Yeah, consumer and employment. And there are protections, though, for both consumers and employees. They have to have the agreement written in a certain way for it to be enforceable in California against their wishes.
All right. Let me then throw this one to you, Mark. Is mediation voluntary or mandatory?
It's a little or both, Chuck, because the courts have totally overwhelmed. So most of the courts in various counties have developed...
You're talking about California.
California
now.
Have yeah. developed programs where you can either go to arbitration sometimes on a non-binding basis, or you can go to mediation. But generally, it's a voluntary process where the parties agree that they will mediate their disputes, and everybody has to agree to that. But I think we're going to again see a continuing trend where the courts are going to compel parties to go to mediate because they can't handle all the litigation that's been filed.
And certainly I have seen in my practice as a deputy DA for the San Mateo County DA's office and doing this program, I have seen how mediation has become bigger and bigger in terms of it being a more practical approach that a lot of people feel that should be taken. Would you agree with that?
Without question.
Yeah. Lisa, how effective is mediation?
Well, there have been a lot of empirical studies on court mediations. I wouldn't say a lot, but there have been some empirical studies on court mediation. These are programs that are typically free and offered in connection with court cases where mediators will volunteer their time. And those have had, you know, about a 65% success rate. In other words, you're much more likely than not to have your case settled by taking it to those programs. In private mediation practice, the rates are considerably higher even than that, upwards of 80, 90, and 95%.
When
study of my own practice, it came to 94.5%.
Well, is that because it's so effective, anywhere between 80 to 95 or 94% effective, is that because it's so much more reasonable for parties to go to mediation versus to go through the prolonged, I would say, agony of a lawsuit?
That's one of the factors, Chuck. But what the public is getting to learn is that they are going to be active participants in the process. If you're in court, you have a judge who's going to decide whether or not your case is sufficient to go to a trial. So a judge could dismiss the case or could reduce the size of the case. Lots of uncertainty, a lot of expense. And then you have a trial and you don't know what a jury is going to do. Here, because it's a process where the parties are actively participating, they can reduce the risk. They can reduce the cost because it's very expensive to go through litigation. And it's really getting to be, I think, well known in the community, the lay community, that if I have a legal dispute, mediation is probably the most prudent, the best way to resolve your case early on.
Well, today, with unfortunately, at least in California, funding problems that the courts have gotten, if you have a case that's going to go to trial, whether it's by a judge, perhaps like in family law, or if it would be a civil case which might involve a jury, it can take well beyond a year.
I just mediated a case on Monday that got filed in 2008, and this is 2015.
That's
a little bit too long, I'd say.
And it just got settled.
No, that's no good. When I want to ask you this, Mark, when is the right time for parties to consider to mediate?
And I think it's on a case-by-case basis, Chuck. I mean, there's some cases, certainly the earlier, the better, but you really have to do some preparation for the mediation. So there has to be an exchange of information between the parties. So if a lawsuit's filed and the other side calls up and says, let's mediate next week, you know, it may be too early.
Sure.
And so I think the parties have to go through some, and it can be done informally. It doesn't have to be done through, the court overseeing it. But I think the parties, through their lawyers generally, should exchange some basic information so when the mediation begins, they have some knowledge of here's what the claims are and here's what our defenses are.
Let me ask you this. Is mediation something being really practical? And, of course, some people obviously cannot afford to hire a lawyer, but let's assume that someone who has a dispute or potential lawsuit can afford to pay a certain amount. Do you feel it's really necessary to have a lawyer, generally speaking, Lisa?
To have a lawyer present is not necessary in every case. I do find, though, in my own private practice, of course, they're always represented by lawyers. In the court cases that I oversee as part of the USC mediation program, the parties are usually not represented by counsel, but sometimes they are. it really just depends on the nature of the case,
mm-hmm.
and mostly how much is at stake. Lawyers are expensive. There are pro bono lawyers willing to take on cases, but if you get into legal fees, it can erode into the value of what people are fighting over.
Let me just take a brief moment and let you know, again, everyone, that this is our regular Call a Lawyer night. So, as I said, we do this every month. The number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For the areas of workers' compensation law, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, real estate, patent law. Also in Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, Keith Clifford, who is a civil trial certified specialist, certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's the director there. He's also available to talk with you about civil trial practice. His number is, and toll-free, 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. Again, everyone, Call a Lawyer is something that is a great boon, I think, for the average person. There's no obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a great service these attorneys are performing, so take advantage of it. In a few minutes, I will give you our toll-free number where you can call in and speak to Lisa Klerman and Mark Rudy. Now I'm going to call you Rooney.
Right, that's all right.
Yeah, your dad was Mickey, right? pardon me for that.
That's okay.
All right. So
can I follow up on what
Yeah,
Lisa
please,
just said?
If you would.
So in terms of having a lawyer, you know, most employees can find a lawyer who will work on a contingency. So they'll work on a percentage of any recovery. For lawyers, you know, they're running a business. And so it's also beneficial for them to get the case settled early so they don't have to put the time and resources into a case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the case gets settled early on in a few months rather than it's 5 years. You know, the case can be closed. The employee can get the closure and resolution, and the lawyer, you know, will get a fee for that.
It's one of the things that makes employment mediations different from mediations in other practice areas, because in employment law, it's almost always the case that the plaintiff, he or she is not actually out of pocket for those legal fees because the lawyer takes it on a contingency fee basis. But that's not true of cases that are in other practice areas, and that's where you see more non-represented parties in mediation.
Lisa, how does one go about choosing the right mediator?
You have to sort of know your client. If you're just thinking of this question from the standpoint of a lawyer looking to hire a mediator, maybe you need a mediator who's got a gentle touch to be able to bond with a sensitive plaintiff, employee, or maybe you're dealing with a client who responds best to careful, analytical, legal reasoning, so you want to choose your mediator who is very methodical and technical in analyzing the law. Maybe you need somebody who's going to pound on a difficult party or the other side in order to be able to get the case settled. So I think it's something that's analyzed very much on a case-by-case basis.
I'm a pounder.
You're a pounder?
I'm an evaluative mediator, and I think Lisa is correct. She is correct. You know, getting a result is very important.
Yes.
And I think whether you're a facilitative mediator, which often happens in domestic cases.
What does that mean by facilitating?
That means that you're not really opining on the case, you're not evaluating, you're not doing a risk analysis. You're getting the parties to really sit down and have a dialogue, and it happens a lot, I know, in domestic relation cases.
Sure.
But you know, it's closure is so important for people, and I think a mediator who is able to, you know, to assist the parties in getting that done, is somebody who is going to add a lot of value.
So, all right, choosing the right mediator, though, is something, Lisa, that someone who's a layperson isn't really going to know how to do this. This is another reason where you would want to have a lawyer. Is that right?
I think that's correct, Chuck. I think it's one of the areas where the client needs to rely on the lawyer's expertise, and part of that expertise is knowing the field of mediators in the area of employment law and who's got what particular skill set they're looking for.
And some people may say, well, Chuck's trying to get jobs for lawyers. This is not the case. When I designed this program 31 years ago, and I think Mark, you were with me. You were with me at the time.
I was 10 years old.
Yeah. Mark was 10 years old. I was 11 at the time. But in any event, my goal was when the State Bar of California decided that it wanted to fund such a program, it was with the idea that I wanted people to get education about the law, learn how to prevent problems. I'm a consumer advocate. I'm not here as an agent for lawyers, even though I'm a lawyer. But I've been a public lawyer for a long, long time and had the consumer in mind. And so please, everyone, when we're talking or I'm talking about the importance of having a lawyer, it's not that I want that lawyer to get a job. I want you to be helped. That's the whole point. Mark,
let me tell you, there are also some very effective mediators who are not lawyers.
Oh, yes, I understand
that. In various fields, in domestic relations, construction, real estate, labor and employment. And so you don't have to have a law degree to become a mediator, become an effective mediator.
How does one find these effective mediators who are not lawyers?
Basically through, you know, word of mouth, maybe through, you know, the Bar Association. I'm not so sure, but maybe Lisa can help there. But just generally reputational.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's, you know, one mediator I'm very familiar with does a lot of real estate mediations, and he's a former real estate investor. And knows the area pretty well.
Sure.
And there are programs that offer free mediation services that are, staffed by a combination of lawyers and non-lawyers. Mm-hmm. And the program at USC is mediation students who are about to become lawyers, but they don't have their law degree yet. So the practice of mediation is not the same thing as the practice of law, and a non-lawyer mediator can do a very effective job at mediating the dispute.
Lisa, how long has USC had the mediation clinic?
We have had that now. We are in our 10th year.
Oh, wow. And you are the director of that. How long have you been the director?
Well, I launched it, so I've been there since the first day.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. It's great training for law students to be able to learn something about mediation, I would think. And so... The USC Mediation Clinic makes itself available to the general public? Is that how it's done?
We do. And so if there's a dispute of any type and you contact us at USC, we're able to help out, and there's no cost at all to the participants for that.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. What documents? Let me come back to you, Mark, for this. When you are doing a mediation, generally speaking, who participates in the mediation? Besides, I presume, the clients that do.
Right. That's a good question, Chuck. It's not a trial. So you don't have to bring witnesses to the mediation session. Generally, your lawyer, yourself, if there's a family member, you know, spouse, partner, somebody who you rely upon for support, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's on the plaintiff side or the employee side. If it's an employment case or it's a domestic relations case, obviously, both parties will have to attend. And sometimes you see an expert come in with an economic damage report, or some psychologist or psychiatrist may come, but that's fairly rare. It's not required. On the defense side or the employer side in these employment cases, it's generally the lawyer. It's usually somebody from human resources. Hopefully it's somebody who also has the power to make decisions. Mm-hmm. It's so important at the mediation session to make progress. And if somebody comes with insufficient authority or doesn't know much about the case, or is like if in a sexual harassment case, if the company brings the lawyer and the alleged sexual harasser to the mediation, it oftentimes is not a successful one because there's just so much emotion involved.
Yes.
And this person obviously cannot be unbiased and objective.
Sure. Or you need really, really separate conference rooms for those people so they never see each other in the course of the day.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. Let me then ask you, Lisa, what documents are important in order for the mediation to succeed, generally speaking?
Well, I'm one of those mediators that likes to get as much information as possible. So the lawyers will submit what are called mediation briefs, mm-hmm. which explain the case and the legal basis for bringing it and defending it. A damages analysis, which is an analysis of how much is owed or not owed to the plaintiff seeking damages. Beyond that, I think if there's key documents, emails, in the case of sexual harassment allegations, photographs sometimes, or logs of phone records, deposition transcripts. Sometimes I like to read those in preparation for a mediation.
So in other words,
the more I learn, the more I can help people.
In a case that has already been filed and there's been some action done, some discovery, including depositions, you would certainly, when finally the lawyers agree, well, let's try to mediate this, you would certainly, as a mediator, you would want to have those depositions to get a better feel for the parties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, can I just say that I think there's an absolute correlation between the amount of information that you are willing to provide to the other side so they can evaluate the case. And if you start withholding important documents, emails, photos, whatever, because you're concerned that the case is not going to settle, then mediation is not going to lead to a good result. And so I always tell the parties, you've got to be as transparent as you can, because if you have like an insurance carrier looking at the case and you have this smoking gun email, you're telling the mediator, I'm going to hold on to that until, you know, until later on in the case.
Until I stab the other guy in the back.
Right. It doesn't work.
If you're going to go to mediation, you want to be open and upfront, it sounds like.
As much as you can.
Yeah.
And I always tell the parties, listen, I can only do so much. I'm not, you know, going to be in a position to get this case settled if you're going to withhold all this important evidence.
No, that doesn't make good sense. All right, for those of you listening to this program live July 29th, this is our Call a Lawyer night where you can talk to attorneys off the air. And that's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And because he is not here, Keith Clifford, who's a certified specialist in civil trial practice, and he's in Wisconsin. You can talk to him now if you'd like to talk about civil trial practice. It's his toll-free number, 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. In just a few minutes, I will be asking you to call in and talk with my guests on the air. And that number you may want to jot down is also toll-free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And for those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, let me tell you who my guests are. And by the way, in case you turned in a little bit late and you wondered, what in the world is this program? This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I'm the host of this. And my guests are Lisa Clearman, a law professor at USC, and she's the director of the USC Mediation Clinic. She has her mediation office in Rolling Hills Estates, California. That sounds awful nice. Is it as nice as it sounds, Lisa?
Well, it's Southern California weather. And
are there actual rolling hills there?
Rolling Hills.
How nice. I've never been there. I was brought up in L.A., but I never got to Rolling Hills. My other guest is someone who's been a great supporter of this program, Mark Rudy, who was awarded the 2013 Mediator of the Year Award by the San Francisco Trial Lawyers Association. His firm is in San Francisco, and Mark has been involved with me on this program, I don't know, for the better part of the 31 years I've been doing this.
I think it was the second year
when you were only 11 years old. Okay, here's the next question for Mark. Preparing for the mediation, I think Lisa probably covered that, where she was saying how much she likes to learn about this and reading depos, etc.
The only thing I can say in preparing for the mediation, you know, the mediator, of course, prepares and reads documents and reads depositions and reads exhibits. But between the lawyer and the party, I think preparation is very important. So for those who have a legal dispute, don't withhold things from your lawyer.
Yeah.
I mean, tell the lawyer, tell her both the bad and the good things.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the lawyer's got to evaluate the case also, and it's going to play a role in the mediation. And if you just say, well, here's my favorable performance review I got last year, but you withhold the one you got the year before, which was unfavorable, you know, you shouldn't be doing that.
In other words, you're saying be open and honest.
Open and honest.
Two major words here. Okay, what about, Lisa, what about confidentiality? A lot of stuff will be said in these mediation sessions by either or both parties that could be possibly detrimental if it went to trial. How do you deal with confidentiality?
Sure. Well, confidentiality is one of the hallmarks of the mediation process. The matters that take place at mediation, it's all private, it's confidential, it's away from the prying eyes of the public, versus a very public forum like a trial. And so many parties, when they're deciding to take their case to mediation, see the benefits to both sides in having this process that's confidential, and there's a great deal of protection within California for the confidentiality of the mediation process. So our evidence code has built-in protections that prohibit mediators from testifying about what occurs in mediation, and articulates that what occurs in mediation and what's said and done in mediation stays confidential. You can't talk about it.
If Lisa, though, one of the parties says something that being open and honest is very damaging to that party's position in this case or conflict, that could be very, if it doesn't settle through mediation, that could be very important if this case goes to trial. How do you deal with that?
Well, it sort of depends on what it is that was revealed. If it's the sort of things that are done in mediation that can't be repeated because of the confidentiality of the mediation process, then it stays sacrosanct and safe. If it's the sort of thing that can be discoverable through the normal discovery rules and process, then just because it was shown in mediation or said in mediation wouldn't prevent it from being discoverable and used later.
So by discoverable, for example, if the case is not settled at that point in mediation and it goes on in the courts and a deposition is going to be taking place of that person who has said something very damaging to him or herself, is that something that you can, Mark, talk
about?
No,
I think that Alicia's right. I mean, if there are certain documents or writings that the parties can get in a lawsuit. But in terms of statements made in the mediation setting, if I make a statement that may be damaging to me, it can't be relied upon by the other side, who will, you know, argue that, well, you said in this mediation session something that's totally different than what you're saying today. It can't be used.
All right. We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who are listening to this program live, I now invite you to call in. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have questions about employment law, whether you are an employee or an employer, I certainly would like you to join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns, et cetera, et cetera. And my guests are labor and employment law attorneys who specialize in mediating labor and employment law cases and disputes. Mark Rudy, who was awarded the 2013 Mediator of the Year Award by the San Francisco Trial Lawyers Association. His law firm in San Francisco is Rudy, Exelrod, Zeef, and Lowe. My other guest is Lisa Klerman, a law professor at USC, which is down south, everybody. University of Southern California. She's the director of the USC Mediation Clinic. She has a mediation office in Rolling Hills Estates, California. So please join us with your questions on the air if you like. And that, again, toll-free is 866-798-8255. If you would like to talk with any of our attorneys for Call a Lawyer, off the air, no obligation on your part, that magic number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. We have three of our certified specialists who are not with us tonight, but we'll return your respond to your calls, by the way. If you will call in, and whether it's workers' compensation law or family law or legal malpractice law, if you have questions about that, if you will call in the 800 number, give your name and phone number, I will see that these people respond. Workers' compensation law is certified specialist Alice O'Sullivan. Family law is certified specialist Janet Lee Frankel, and legal malpractice law certified specialist Peter Fortune. So if you have questions in that area, call the 800 number, and I'll see that they call you back. With us in the conference room, however, for criminal law is certified specialist Jeff Hayden, who is also the president of the San Mateo County Bar Association in California. Sal Timpano is here for landlord-tenant law. Joseph LaPera is here for employment law. Frank Adam is here for tax law, real estate law. He's also a real estate broker. And Ron Rohde is here for patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB, arbitration. And tomorrow, if you are listening to this program live, tomorrow, July 30th, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available for you to talk with him at his 800 number between 8 a.m. and noon. And that's 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-311. If you call and you get a busy signal on his phone, leave your name and phone number, and Mr. Baer will call you back. Also, in Madison, Wisconsin, Keith Clifford, who is a civil trial practice certified specialist by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's the director there. He's there at his landline. Well, actually, yeah, I hope it's his landline phone. It's a toll-free number, and you can talk to him right now until, the end of another half hour, 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. And we're going to take your calls in just a minute. I want to have one more question that I want to pose to Mark before we take the first call on the air. Joint sessions. What's the situation with joint sessions in mediation?
Well, you know, early on, the parties generally would engage in the session where the lawyers were there, the parties were there. The lawyers
were all together.
All together in the same room. And
holding hands, right?
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah.
And it depends upon the field. If it's like a family law, domestic relation dispute, sometimes the parties stay around the table the entire day to try to get the case settled. Or in the employment dispute, if you have somebody who's an ongoing employee, you've got to decide whether or not this relationship can continue on going forward. Sometimes you stay in this joint session. What's happened recently is, unfortunately, the parties are afraid to get into joint sessions, and it's not a practice that's been done as often as it was in the past, because they're concerned about parties getting out of control, the lawyers dominating the whole process.
Yeah.
But a good mediator can monitor that. So the parties have an opportunity to address their concerns to each other. I think it's very important that a joint session be certainly recommended and hopefully utilized.
What about separate, and Lisa, what about private caucusing? I mean, that's a term that mediators use. What does that mean, and what's the significance of that?
Okay, well, we use the term private caucusing when we talk about meeting separately with one side, excluding the other side from that conversation, and then we meet with the other side after that and go back and forth like that in what's called private caucusing or discussions in different conference rooms. And the idea there is that people will be more candid, more open in talking with you about their case, both the strengths and weaknesses, when they don't have the other side present to try to influence. A mediator, too, can do more effective work, I think, by meeting separately with the parties.
So, in other words, if the mediation that you are conducting is being at your office, you would have one room for one party and his or her attorney, and another room for another party with his or her attorney. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
So you're doing back and forth between the two rooms, I presume.
Yeah, it's sort of like a shuttle diplomacy.
Right. And sometimes there are more than two rooms. And let me say
that. Why do you say that? Why more than two rooms?
Well, because you may have two employers. You may have an employer that sold a company. You may have two
staffing
more than
agencies.
Yeah, more than one plaintiff. you know, every mediation is different. So there are mediations where, and I'm sure Lisa does this also, you believe that the lawyer is creating a major obstacle to resolution. You take the lawyer out. And
does that mean you knock him out, or do you just
well, you do a little
gently,
of both.
Gently.
Right. Well, Mark, you said you were a pounder, right?
Yeah, I'm a pounder. So you take the lawyer out. You don't take the party out necessarily, but if the lawyer's causing the obstacle or being unreasonable, I find it sometimes does work. Sometimes you take the lawyers out from both sides, and you have a discussion
about.
Do
you generally, as the mediator, you're kind of the captain of the ship here. Do the lawyers generally respond cooperatively when you want them to get out?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. That's when you want Bruno to come in and drag him out.
But,
huh?
Well, you know, usually it does help to at least find out why you're taking this, what you believe to be a position that's going to lead to a failure in a mediation session.
Yeah.
I don't get the parties together generally. If they request it, you got to be very careful because it sometimes does lead to problems, but sometimes it does work. I've had, especially if somebody wants to make a real apology about the conduct that their employees committed to this employee.
Yeah.
But it can't be a fake apology. It's got to be a real, genuine, sincere apology. I'm sure Lisa's faced this before.
Let me just take a moment here. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal, those of you who are in the San Francisco Bay Area, if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bar Association's Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, California, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. That's 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service and you can call your own during normal business hours, and what they'll do is they'll find someone who's experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. With rare exception, for a half an hour consultation in California through the lawyer referral service, you will pay something between $25 to $35 for the half an hour. That does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to support what is a very helpful service in educating consumers. So that's available to you. Again, I want to invite you. You're awful quiet, everybody out there tonight. If you have questions about employment law that you would like to pose to my guests that perhaps don't focus on mediation, you're welcome to call in. It's, again, the toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, whether you're an employee or an employer. If you would like to talk, pardon me, with any of the attorneys off the air at no obligation to you, that number is 1-800-525-9917. And if you would like to talk about civil trial practice, this is a different number for Keith Clifford in Madison, Wisconsin. His toll-free number is 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. And I want to let all of you know that because the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which Keith is a director of, has recently become a funder of this program, we are now on the NPR public radio satellite, building stations, I hope, across the country, because a lot of what we talk about, although we're talking frequently about California law, the principles, I think, are pretty much the same throughout. The law may be a little bit different, but I think the principles are about the same throughout the United States. So my goal is to try to educate people about what may be available to them in educating them as well as in avoiding problems. So I hope you will take advantage of this. Let me come to you, Mark, about this. how do cases get settled? I mean, besides your pounding on the table, besides that, how do they get settled?
Well, you know, I always say, I mean, it's up to the parties and the lawyers. And they get cases get settled if people are reasonable. When the day starts out, you have a demand that's far greater than what generally the company is willing to pay. But the process works through private caucusing, through joint sessions, through the work of the mediator, through the work of the lawyers, but especially the parties. If they recognize that getting this case settled at this point is going to be lead to a better quality of life, certainly for the employee, and for the employer, it's a business decision. They're not going to have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to defend. The case will get settled. The mediator is very important because sometimes you have an impasse that occurs, and the mediator can go ahead at that point and say, listen, you know, we could go ahead and call it a day, or the parties can, you know, move forward, and the mediator offers suggestions about, you know, maybe if you made a demand that was 10% less than what it currently is, you'll get a response from the employer. Sometimes the mediator makes a proposal at the end of the day, you know, saying this is what I think is a fair way to resolve the dispute. It's not what you wanted on the plaintiff side. It's far more than what the company wanted to pay. It's very fluid. And, you know, because the parties have control of the process, the cases get settled.
Let's take a first call. Carol, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you so much for being there. I loved your explanation about different styles of mediation. My question is, in an ability to head off any disputes, would you therefore suggest that prior to hiring an employee and prior to taking on also volunteers for a project, would you suggest that as part of the packet that you have them and yourself sign an intention to mediate any disputes?
How about you, Lisa, on this one?
Sure. Well, Carol, thanks for calling in. And to answer your question, it would be something of an offshoot of what employers are already doing in the way of arbitration agreements, only what you're describing would be take this case to a mediation process where you're agreeing to, in good faith, attend a mediation to try to work out your dispute amicably. And sometimes you do see that in comprehensive ADR agreements that are signed at the inception of employment. Typically, it's a two-step process where you first are agreeing to go to mediation, and if that should result in a successful settlement, then you're all done. And if it doesn't, then the second step would be arbitration, where the third-party neutral would be brought in to make the decision about the outcome.
Elisa's absolutely right about that. I mean, you're seeing a lot of that happen where you have these mediation arbitration agreements. The benefit for the employee is the company picks up the fee of the mediator, generally, if you're going to agree to this program. So you don't have to pay a half or a quarter or whatever of the mediator's fee or the cost of the mediation. All the programs I've seen, it's all at the expense of the employer.
And that's one of those protections I was mentioning earlier that California law has imposed, telling employers that, look, if you want to impose the arbitral process on your employees, you need to pick up the cost.
But however, by that, although, if the parties have their separate attorneys, certainly not the employer is not going to pick up the employee's attorney's cost.
No.
Unless that's part of the overall deal.
Oh, okay.
But generally not, though.
Okay,
right.
Generally not.
Right.
All right. Well, okay, Carol, does that help you?
Yes. Does that also apply, would you say, to volunteers that you would be having do things for projects you work on?
Well, I haven't seen these are people who are like interns.
Yes.
You know, you better be very careful about how you deal with interns nowadays, because a lot of, especially young college students, you know, go into internship programs without pay. But across the country, there have been litigation that's gone on where the courts have held you have to pay at least the minimum wage. If it's a volunteer, I haven't seen any agreement that has a mediation arbitration feature for a volunteer. I'm not sure if Lisa has.
Have you, Lisa?
I don't think I've seen that in the pure voluntary setting. But I do think that when you're analyzing this issue and just about any employment issue, it's important to think of your interns or volunteers much as employees, because it's possible that under the law they really are employees and not unpaid interns.
That's very interesting. Well, Carol, thank you very much
for calling.
Yeah, take care.
Yes.
All right, our number again, our toll-free number for your legal rights is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255, if you have a question in the employment law area. If you would like to talk to any of the lawyers who are here for Call a Lawyer Night in the conference room, that's 1-800-525-9917. If you'd like to talk with Keith Clifford in Madison, Wisconsin, his toll-free number is 888-791-8422, 888-791-8422. If you have questions in the area of personal injury or wrongful death or medical malpractice, he's there waiting for your call. All right, we have Rachel. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Rachel, you're on the air, my dear.
Okay, yeah, so I've been working for a dog walking company for 6 months and was just presented with a non-disclosure agreement. There are a few other employees who signed and returned the agreement right away, but after reading through, I had a problem with two clauses. One of the clauses states that when I leave the company for whatever reason, I would have to allow a company representative to go through my personal phone, computer, or anything that they wanted to verify that I'm not keeping any trade secrets, but essentially client contacts is what they're concerned with.
Rachel, let me stop you for a moment. Have you thought of conferring with a employment law attorney about this?
I asked a question on a website, yes, but nothing further.
I'll tell you, what you're doing is you're talking about a lot of issues that are very important that cannot be resolved on this radio program. And also under the state bar's ethics rules, California state bar's ethics rules, my guests are not permitted to give specific legal advice on the air. I understand you're in San Francisco, right?
Yes.
I think your best bet, my suggestion is to start by calling the San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service and see if you can get an appointment with an attorney who represents employees and take this proposal that your employer has presented to you and get some face-to-face advice to begin with. And also, if you want to have a little bit more time to before you do that, I suggest that you might want to call. You haven't tried calling our Call a Lawyer Night number tonight, have you?
Not yet.
Okay, I think you should and ask to speak to Joseph LePera, L-E-P-E-R-A. He's an employment law attorney of considerable experience. And that number, again, is 1-800-525-9917. I'm not trying to dodge or let's say cheat you out of a response, but yours is much too complicated for us to really try to take the time. So if you do that, and especially tomorrow or when it's convenient for you, call the Lawyer Referral Service for San Francisco and see if you can't get an appointment.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Take care now. Bye-bye. All right, we've got Chris. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi.
So my question is about when somebody's considered an employee and when they are not. And I heard it mentioned on the program earlier that even if somebody's not an employee, they may be considered an employee for certain purposes. And what I'm wondering is, can someone give a quick summary, if there is such a thing, as to, like, certain circumstances, it's the lowest burden to show their employee, and then for certain other considerations, it's a higher burden, and certain others. So, for instance, you know, if somebody is considered an employee for compensation issues or workers' comp issues versus kind of issues related to unemployment versus issues related to, I don't know, protection against exposure to inappropriate language or harassment in the workplace.
Chris, are you looked upon at your place of employment as an independent contractor?
I'm not.
You're
I'm
not.
An employee.
you know that you are an employee. Well, let me get some comments from Mark with respect to what you've said so far.
Well, there's been a lot of publicity about Uber and Lyft and some of these companies that have started up with apps where, and it's been certainly early on in litigation with respect to, you know, whether or not these people are independent contractors or employees. And the courts are still going through that whole process. But essentially, the critical question is the right to control.
Mm-hmm.
Does the party that is compensating you, do they have the right to control your workday and how you do your job and compensation and scheduling and so forth? And that's the short answer in a very complex area.
What if you have the type of a job that you are doing most of your work at home? You have a computer at home. You've got some goal that your employer or whoever the company or the business is. How do you deal with something like that, Lisa? How would you deal with something like that?
Well, I think the location of where the work is performed is not actually an important criteria.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, telecommuting is its own separate issue in employment law, employers that allow it or don't allow it, and you know, legal problems that can ensue when someone's, you know, working from home versus elsewhere, you know, exempt, non-exempt issues, all kinds of things. But in terms of the definition of whether somebody is an employee or not, the location of their work site may not matter so much. That issue sometimes comes up jurisdictionally when the issue might be in mediation. Well, is this person a California employee or an out-of-state employee? Mm-hmm. Where are they domiciled? Where are they doing the work? So that's the context in which we sometimes see this issue of the location making a difference.
Are you in management, Chris?
Yes, I am.
That's what I thought. Okay, now we know. Now we know, Chris. Does your employer have an attorney?
Well, we have outside counsel.
Do you? Okay.
Of a good quality. And what I'm kind of the reason I ask about it, like for different levels, was I'm learning about the fact that in some cases, there may be different thresholds or different kind of, you know, you may be considered an employee for resolving one type of issue, but not for resolving another type. And I'm not yet seeing a pattern or a framework to that I can kind of rely on as an obvious, what I would call a stepped.
Well, it's a very
criteria.
Chris, it's very complex. The primary issue is the right to control, and then there's some secondary factors, many of them, up to 20 different things you look at.
Mm-hmm.
Can you work for others? Who buys the supplies? You know, who's set your schedule? Who sets your compensation? There are just so many different factors. It's going to have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Very briefly, Chris, because I want to take one more call. Is your outside counsel an employment law firm?
Well, it's a big law firm.
Oh, it's a big one. Okay.
Experts
All right.
in this area.
Okay. Well,
so
we're gonna move on, Chris, because I want to take one more call. Thanks for
Terrific.
Calling. Thanks for calling. Margie, you're it, my dear.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
I received a judgment. I was an independent contractor, and I disputed my employer. And I received a judgment, and I was going through the state labor attorney is the one that's trying to collect on my judgment. And at this point, it's been a year and a half. And I don't really see any activity. I've actually never spoken to a state labor attorney. I only speak to who I call her gatekeeper. And it seems like any pertinent information in trying to collect on this judgment, I've given them. So I was just wondering, is it likely that I will ever receive my settlement? Or, you know, what is the ramifications for them not
Margie, did you have an attorney?
No, I didn't. I brought a friend of mine who was very well-versed in independent contractor.
Mm-hmm. An attorney or not?
No, she's not an attorney.
Let me make a suggestion at this point. You have a written settlement, is that right? You have a written judgment?
Yes.
Yeah. If I may suggest this to you, I think at this point, since you don't know what's going to happen here, I highly recommend that you want to contact and sit down with an attorney an employment law attorney who represents employees. Take your judgment with you, and give yourself the benefit of that. If you want to jot this down, I know you're in Alameda County.
Yeah.
And I want to give you the Alameda County Bar Association number, and you call and ask, see if you can get an appointment with an employment law attorney who represents employees.
Okay.
That number is 510-302-2222.
Okay. So, but the state labor attorney is representing me?
Well, yeah, go ahead, Mark. Very briefly. We're nearly out of time.
It's probably you went through a hearing with the Department of Labor Standard Enforcement. They do generally represent you. They have a big backup in terms of cases. I think eventually they will get to your case, but you may want to accelerate it by talking with a private lawyer.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, Margie, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. We are nearly at the end of the program. Mark, 10 words or less. What do you want to say?
Well, I think that we're going to hear more and more about mediation, and it's going to be the predominant way to settle your case in the future.
How about Lisa, 10 words or less?
Oh, I'll add to that by saying that I think we're already in that future where this is where cases are being resolved.
Well, I thank you both very much for being with us on this program. It's been great to have you here, and I hope that we'll get together again sometime. My guests have been two labor and employment law attorneys who now specialize in mediation, labor and employment law cases and disputes. Mark Rudy, who was awarded the 2013 Mediator of the Year Award by the San Francisco Trial Lawyers Association. His office is in San Francisco. And Lisa Clurman, a law professor at USC and the director of the USC Mediation Clinic. She has a mediation office in Rolling Hills Estates, California. Thank you both very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Lisa.
Very nice to have you on the program. I just want to let you know, everybody, that this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar of California. Additional funding of the program is provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Next time on Your Legal Rights, the topic will be the Supreme Court same-sex marriage decision, Obergefell versus Hodges, and the dissenting justices' arguments that the decision threatens democracy and religious liberty. My guests will be Janet Lee Frankel, a certified specialist in California family law, and Myron Moskowitz, professor of law emeritus at Golden Gate University. And that's next time on Your Legal Rights on this public radio station. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.